Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Well, there you go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the East Anglian's EDL radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglian's EDL radio show, the official English Defence League radio station and the official voice of the EDL. And people been mucking about with putting things in, it's making me chuckle. We've got tonight Tim Cat Strangler 101, meow, our very own Mr. Tim Bird. Tonight is Tim the Defender. Good to see you, Tim.
Yes, good evening, Jeff, and how the devil are you, sir?
Well, I've got a horrible cold, and it's just it's a little bit annoying, if you know what I mean, a little bit tedious when you've got one of those, when your nose keeps running, you have to keep chasing it around the house. It's no fun.
You know what they say, Jeff? If your feet smell and your nose runs, you're built upside down. That's the problem.
Trust you, Tim. I love it. Anyway, good to see you here this evening, Tim. And I noticed how you sleep through the cat flap. You've definitely been on one of these diets or something or other.
I was going to say I was on the
Kel
treadmill this afternoon.
She's Mouser tonight. Our Kel, our Red Fox blogger. She is Mouser this evening. Aren't you, Kel?
Mouser. Hello, Jeff and Tim. And actually, yes, I am. And it's not because I'm, it's not because I want Tim to be chasing me around. I'm so fired. No, it's because I had a crisis, as it were, over the weekend with my magic mouse. Now, I have one of these remote mouses, and it lays on a memory pad, and it's wireless. Well, it's not as magical as... one would think. So I had to go to the computer store and get myself a new mouse, which is a wired mouse. And now I'm messing with yet another wire all over my desk.
Wireless mouses before, Kel, on one of the computers I had. And what I found is I had to keep changing the batteries all the time. It's convenient because you don't have to muck about with wires, but in the end it just got a little bit costly. Keep changing the batteries because, as you know, you have your mouse and it's just loaded up all the time, and it does burn the batteries very, very quick. But I'm glad you sorted it out, Kel, because it can be rather annoying when your mouse keeps mucking about. But glad to know that you sorted it out. We've got Frank the Enforcer. I like that.
Frank the Enforcer, who's listening for now, yeah. Tim and I can tell you a little story later on about my magic mouse and what it actually did to me on my Friday show. I was maneuvering my mouse. I was hovering over the edit button for my program, my Friday program, and it jumped on me. I clicked before I noticed, and I managed to delete my entire Friday show.
Oh, no. Can you not get it back, Kel? Can't you sort of? Isn't there an archive?
Blog Talk Radio, they probably could retrieve it, but what I did instead is that I stayed up all night and rebooked a show for the early hours of Saturday morning, and Tim, in his graciousness, was there to help me through passionate about something, it's hard to repeat it. I'm not an actor. I very much go off the top of my head, so repeating the particular topic matter was not going to be as effective. But Tim, acting as the co-host that morning, was vastly improved what my otherwise abysmal performance would have been.
Oh, Kel,
it's never going to be dismal, Kel, whatever you say. It's always going to be interesting, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Of course it is. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. So it was Kel's Allah Akbar mouse that caused all the problems.
That's right.
Well, there you go.
Yes.
The Akbar mouse. What can we say about that Akbar mouse, eh? Hey, Tim. Some of our listeners, we've got new listeners listening all the time, and they're probably like, what are they talking about mouse for? Well, basically, we were discussing something last week, It started with myself and Kel, and I explained to her, going back, about a few years ago, and Army probably remembers, because he was about time, it's about 3 years ago, and I was talking to one of my Jewish friends, and my Jewish friends informed me that when you hear these Muslims cry out, Allah Akbar, you know, it's boom, this, that, and the other, basically, Akbar is an old Hebrew name, and it goes back way before Islam and all that, but it means actually a small rodent or rat, whatever it is. It's a small rodent, isn't it, to declare as a cow, did we say?
Mm-hmm.
A rodent or rat. So every time they go Allah Akbar, they're saying Allah the mouse or Allah the rodent. So there you go. That's just something that it's a bit of an in-joke now. We spoke about it on the Friday show, didn't we? Or was it the Thursday show?
Yes. In fact,
so that's just for our new listeners, because some people were wondering what
it
was on about, Tim.
You've got a little recording.
Yeah, we even had a little soundbite to go with it, Jeff.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah.
Shut up! Oh my God, I don't care!
That was just one of them. We've got a couple of them, and I played the wrong one, but that's okay. I love that one, too.
Or silence, I kill you. But, as I say, that's just the oddities of Islam. Sometimes when you start looking into things and delve into it a little bit more, it just goes to show you there was some very, very strange things about Islam, which we often come about on our journeys when we explore this dismal, funny place called Islam. It's extraordinary, at the same time scary, some of the things that these Muslims believe in. It's just amazing, isn't it? And it doesn't, you know, you think you haven't heard it all, and then all of a sudden we find another story. We go, oh my, it could only happen with Muslims and Islam. Am I right, guys? Every time something, it shocks us once again.
Oh, yes. I mean, the one I like is the belief that Satan sleeps in your nose at night.
Oh, yes.
Well, I can believe him sleeping in Jeff's nose, because, you know, Jeff's got one of those noses, but he definitely doesn't sleep in my nose.
Thank you,
tell you that.
Oh, dear. And also, he's supposed to pee in your ear at night, or something, rather. Is that right? He's supposed to pee in your ear as well.
Like that.
Well, it stands to reason, you know, if he sleeps in your nose and he wakes up in the night and he wants to pee, he doesn't want to have to go very far, does he? So, you know, and Jeff's got one of those ears as well, so I can just see that working as well.
Thank you, Tim. This is the Jeff's appreciation night tonight, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is.
Oh, my goodness me. But, as I say, that's just a few things that we do discuss. I mean, as Tim's trying to explain, that Satan sleeps up my nose and pees in my ear as well. So
specifically, I think Jeff was specifically mentioned in the Quran. Isn't that right, Kel? I'm sure that was the case.
Jeff was mentioned. My goodness me, you know, the UAF said I was the first one into Poland. They said I was the first one into Poland. What else did they say about me? Oh, there's been some stories about me out there, my goodness me. Oh, I'm the Joseph
I'm putting myself on
mute.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God, I'll be right back.
Oh, no. Nothing like a spot of levity just before
me.
The show starts. That's what I say. Oh, I think
my staff are losing the plot, ladies and gentlemen. My apologies.
Oh, dear. All right. Serious now.
I'm sorry. That Jeff Appreciation Day.
What?
Who loves your baby?
Yeah. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was just
Sarah
too funny.
Jeff.
That was
dear.
Just too funny. What have we... anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the East Anglia EDL Radio Soul Comedy Central.
Carry on, Jeff. Just pretend we're not here. Don't you worry about us, mate. Just carry on.
Oh, FDG, Carbonic and Curate.
Oh, dear.
All right.
As I say, well, there's one thing I've got to say is we do like to have fun, and exactly, it might be at my expense, but it doesn't matter. A little while ago, do you remember when I actually spoke at Norwich and the UF wanted to make a comment statement about me? They said that the latest speaker for the EDL was Joseph Goebbels from the EDL or something like that. Tommy knows the story better. And I was supposed to be the first one into Poland as well, so... So I've been busy in my times, haven't I, guys?
Well, I was just going to say, it makes a change from all the cat jokes we've been having recently. What we need is more cat jokes. We've got cat jokes from me, mouse jokes from Kel, and jokes about Satan living in your nose from Jeff. We'll have to have something special for Tommy when he comes on. We'll have to give it a bit of thought.
Yes.
Can't leave him out of the... Can't leave him out of the loop when it comes to having jokes made about him, so we'll have to think of something.
What we need is, that's what you said in the text as well. I was just reading out. What we need is more cat jokes.
show description here?
The
English Defence League radio show, the place where we discuss the issues.
Yep, that's right. We
the newspapers, TV, and terrestrial radio won't touch.
Yeah, well,
will be apprised of the unpleasant truths regarding the scourge and can join in discussion about the facts, not the polished and anonymous half-truths that the authorities published to keep you quiet. And, ladies and gentlemen... Cats and dogs and mouses.
Well, to be fair, Kel, I mean, when was the last time that you read anything in the mainstream media about Satan living in Jeff's nose? I'll bet you haven't read anything about it in the last few months. It's not a subject that the mainstream media...
He's supposed to live in Muslim. I'm not a bloody Muslim anyway.
It's not a subject... that the mainstream media like to touch.
You're supposed to be a Muslim if he lives in your nose. I don't believe in bloody Allah and all that, the old cobblers of that.
Oh, God. Hey, Tim, that's Jeff knows the mainstream media won't touch.
Yeah, that's right. That'll have to be the new title of the show. The nose that the mainstream media won't touch. This story will run and run.
Don't pick on this nose should be the headline.
Yeah, don't pick on this nose. Don't pick on this nose. Yeah, that'd be a great title. That would. I don't suppose by any chance we've got a serious topic lined up for tonight.
we do, but I have this for Jeff. Here, Jeff.
Quit
here
playing
you go.
On my street.
Allahu Akbar.
I see you. And I think that tied in beautifully with the beginning of the show and my trials and tribulations with my mouse. Moving along.
Moving right along.
As we say, the East Anglia EDL Ray Show, and the title tonight for the show, the headline is Quit Praying on My Streets. And I know that we've got an article about that. It does seem that a lot of them are blocking our streets with praying, doing their praying on the floor in the middle of the streets and that, and causing all sorts of congestion with the traffic, this, that, and the other. And of course, the police tend to want to accommodate these people. If it was myself praying on behalf of the EDL and that, I suppose I'd be moved along, wouldn't I? But it's because they are classed as a protected species and a religious status, they are protected. And, it's really annoying. Because, as you say, that's where you got a two-tier system at work in this country. Your thoughts of this issue, Tim, your thoughts?
I first became aware of this, not so much in this country, but in a story that I read in the media from Paris. And it had been problem that had been growing in Paris for quite some time, where the Muslims would actually block pavements and make it difficult for ordinary pedestrians to walk along the pavements. And of course, especially on a Friday lunchtime, where shopkeepers in particular were finding it difficult because they were losing a lot of trade because of it. But the police seemed very reluctant to do much to move the Muslims along at all. Because nothing was done in the early stages to prevent that practice, it now seems to have extended, or until very recently anyway, it was extending to block off entire streets so that people couldn't even get in and out of their houses from the streets during the time that the Islamic prayer was taking place. And it was getting to the point where steel barriers were being erected by Muslims at the either end of the street to stop vehicles going up and down the street during the course of the prayer, plus the fact that people couldn't even get in and out of their houses. And I do believe that as far as Paris was concerned, that they're either looking into or they're passing some bill through the French Parliament at the moment to try and get this stopped. Again, not so much in this country, but other stories have been coming out of other cities throughout Europe. I think Milan and Florence were also suffering from similar outbreaks of Muslims praying in the street. And the reasons seem to be given that they just didn't have anywhere else to pray. But in fact, that wasn't necessarily true, because I'll have to dig the story out, but there's at least one story that I know of that when there was a formal complaint put in about it and the police approached the imam who was leading the prayer at this time, after a bit of discussion, the Muslims did actually get up, go into a nearby building and carried on doing what they were doing in the way of congregational prayer there. So it seemed to be not so much that they were running out of space in the buildings that they had allocated to them, but that they were making a statement about taking over the public space for the purposes of promoting Islam. And that seemed to be the primary reason for them doing that, rather than the fact that they didn't have anywhere indoors to pray. I know that they have been seen praying on streets in the UK. I'm not aware of it being quite the problem that it was described in France and Italy and presumably some other cities in Europe, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to learn that it's on the increase. And if anybody's got any links that they want to drop into the chat room relating to this, I'll be very glad to see them, because it is a subject that we ought to be keeping an eye on.
Very much so, Tim. as I say, that is something that we thought we'd be discussing tonight, if you think it might be whereabouts you might live, you might find it, this problem is a bit of a problem in your area. So if you, maybe you're one of our listeners out there that you notice this phenomenon going on where you live, maybe you'd like to call in and we can discuss it. That's what we're here for. So if you want to do that, guys, anybody that might have this problem wherever you might be, please call in on the show. And if you have a Blog Talk radio, a Blog Talk user, and a Skype user, You'll just left-click on the yes at the top of your screen, follow the prompts, and when it says, do you want to speak to the host or do you want to just listen to the show, you'll press 1 on whatever your device you're on. But if you're not and you're outside the USA, the number to call in is 001-858-777-5934. Repeat, 001-858-777. Oh, I've got the last bit. 5934. All of a sudden, my mind went blank there. It's 7 o'clock. Oh, my God, what am I saying? So, yeah, please do, guys, if you want to call in at any time during the night. Also,
Jeff, I drew a blank on you there. I was on another page, actually, and you were talking about, the theme of the show pretty much is encompassed in the title of the program, in that get off my streets, quit praying in my streets, because we're full up with it. But there's another issue, and I was just reviewing this, and I did not realize that Russia in Moscow, they were having quite an issue with Islamic slaughter in the streets as well. This was to do with the Eid al-Fitr. And they were literally slaughtered. They would take their farm animals and slaughter them over sewer grates, streets in Moscow. Yeah. So Moscow had to crack down on that one, too. I put the link in the chat room for everybody. But,
They don't care, do they, Kel? Children can be walking past, parents can be walking past with their kids, and they see an animal being slaughtered in the streets by a bloody drain and all that, and can hear all the poor animals screaming out, they just don't care, these people. Do you know what really pisses me off more than anything? They take sort of delight in the way that they kill these animals. I've seen them smiling as they cut this poor animal's throat and it struggles and that. And it's absolutely horrific. It's absolutely horrific, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we live in a 21st century where you'd think animals would be humanely killed. You know, a stun, then kill, yes. But to do it just like that, you know, that poor animal feels every cut, everything that happens to it, you know, and I just think it's so, so wrong. I really do. I'm an animal lover, you know, and to think of an animal, you know, okay, it's going to be slaughtered, it's going to be eaten or ate, you know, it's going to be passed on to the consumer, whatever, but to think of it having to suffer in the way that these people do it's a travesty. So you know, what can I say? It's just that it really makes me very angry to think that we live in a day that these people can use their barbaric acts to kill animals in this day and age.
And they don't clean up after themselves. They don't clean up after themselves. They're celebrating the Eid and they're slaughtering the animals in the streets, they take their animals and render
them
further.
I look at it this way,
bleed the blood all over the place.
It's like a blood fest. It's like a blood fest. These people relish blood. As much blood they can get on themselves, the better, these people. They take delight in it, Sim. That's the thing. They take delight. As much
They have a very different attitude to the treatment of animals compared to what we do in our Judeo-Christian civilization, without a doubt. And it's quite commonplace for them to take their children along to watch the slaughter of animals, and they think nothing of it.
That's my other point, in that. The kids are hanging around, too. I mean, you don't see the girls, but you certainly see the 8-9-year-old boys hanging around. And we've all seen that one infamous photo of them riding a dead bull, that the blood is streaming into the streets, and they're all there with their, you know, big-ass grins on their faces. Exactly, Tim.
Sorry, Jeff, you were just about to say...
No, Tim. I was just actually looking for something. There's something I wanted to actually speak about a little bit later. It's just about I was speaking to someone on the phone, I think it was Friday, and it's the Children's Hospital at Ormond Street. And I wanted to give a little shout out because they do so great works, and they're trying to sort of extend the hospital, do this, that, and the other. And I said that I would give them a mention on the show tonight. But I'll go into it in a bit in more details a little bit later on. But because she was a nice lady, and I said, well, I do, you know, we do a radio show. I don't advertise that, but. With a great cause, what you've been doing, what you do. Of course, we'd always give the great cause as a mention on the show. It's only right, isn't it, Tim, that we do that as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything that you've got there, just feel free to interrupt me. I was just going to say, before you mentioned that, when I was talking about Muslim street prayers in Paris, there was a ban that was taken out on it that actually came into effect a little while back, but I don't know what has happened since then, so I was just about to take a look to see if I could develop that story. And while I was looking to develop that story, I've actually found quite a few other stories relating to Muslim street prayers throughout the United States, in New York, outside the Empire State Building, and in various other prominent places. And I haven't... here's another one. They ignore parking laws as well. It's not just the fact that they slaughter animals in the streets. It's not just the fact that they close the streets because of the number of people that are praying in the streets. But I remember another story, and I've just found it here, where they... when they gather, all the surrounding streets, they just get out of their cars and they just leave their cars parked any old how, right across the road, completely blocking the road so that no traffic can go up or down. And I remember this story and thinking, how can they possibly get away with that without the cars being towed away or at the very least given a ticket, as would happen if we tried that kind of stunt in any city in a European country. Us, when I say us, I mean non-Muslims. So I'm just going to bring this particular article up. I'll copy the link and I'll drop it into the chat room for you.
And then
Jeff, if you want to carry on with what you were saying about the Children's Hospital, I'll pick up on this later.
Okay, I was also going to. We've got Tommy the Wonder Kid. Come into the studio quickly as he rushes into the studio, kicks his shoes off. Welcome, Tommy, to the show this evening.
Hello. Hi, ladies and gents. Hello, Kel. Hello, Tim. Tim, some unfortunate news, mate. I can't get the 18th books off work. I booked the weekend off for Slough.
Oh, okay. Not to worry, Tom. I know you're going to be there in spirit. And,
well, I have a feeling it, actually, Tim.
Well, fine.
No, because I mean, I already got the train ticket paid for to Birmingham for the 18th.
Oh, right. Oh, well, okay. Well, if you've got to be in Slough, you've got to be in Slough. But not to worry. I'm sure we're going to see plenty of support outside the court.
I can assure you, you probably will, Tim.
Well, that's actually great news, because I don't want to interrupt the main topic we're going to talk about tonight, but I've just been digging up a lot more information about the kind of things I can talk about while I'm in the court on the day. And if you like, if we've got 5 minutes towards the end of the show, I'll give you a bit of an update.
If I can't be there, I'll just on question time when it's next on, just shouting through the Birmingham one.
Thank you for that, Tommy. Thank you for that.
All you'll hear is welcome to question time with me here in London, free the Birmingham one, EDL.
Free the cat. Yeah.
Free the cat. Cat should be imprisoned.
But yeah, I'm in the process of appealing that one, Tim, so hopefully I will get that booked off, but if I can't, I can't. And Rules are rules and contracts are contracts, aren't they?
Yeah. Not to worry. But I appreciate that you sort of had me in mind. So thank you for that anyway.
Oh, Tim, I think about you all the time, mate. And I mean all the time.
Oh, don't tell everybody. They'll get entirely the wrong idea.
But also, you know, it's a little bit of sad news that we've heard over the last couple of days. Ariel Sharon has passed away. I mean, I know he'd been in a coma for a while, but he was a great warrior, wasn't he, of the times. And I did notice there was a link in the chat room. I think one of our hosts is going to be hosting a show. I'm not sure if it's going to be this week sometime. And I'll have to look back in the chat just to see exactly. It's gone up the list. But I know that one of our radio hosts is hosting a show this week, or it could be tonight even. Where's the episode? Remembering Ariel Sharon. It's called Remembering the Lion of Judah. That'd be on. I'm not sure put the link back in, you can follow it, guys. I'm not quite sure. Let's copy that and then come back in the chat room. Oh, there you go.
I'd also like to say that.
It's Tuesday morning.
Baby,
Findlis, thank you very much. And great to have you here, by the way. Thank you for being in the chat room this evening. And that's on Tuesday morning. That's, of course, that's on Blogspot. And there's the link there as well. So thank you very much for that. I thought we would mention that what a great man he was. What a true warrior. I don't know what you think, your thoughts, Tim, but it's very, very sad a great statesman as well. He was
certainly a man who wanted to project the strength of Israel, and he was vilified for it for a lot of his time in power. Can tell how effective he must have been. I mean, a lot of people who are listening here today probably weren't around at the time when he was at the height of his power. But I mean, he had very, very forceful personality, and he knew what he wanted to see for Israel, and he did Israel a lot of good. Of course, his enemies hated him, which is great. You know, if you've got enemies that hate you, don't worry about it, because it means you've stood up for something in your life. That's the important thing. Okay. So the fact
that's
that he's
right. Said the Arabs were scared of him.
Churchill said that, as Tommy quite rightly pointed out. It was Churchill that said that. Ariel Sharon was a great man, and he did a lot of great things for Israel. And, of course, now that he's dead, all the Palestinians want to pour scorn on him and rubbish his memory.
Cool.
But, you know, that's just part of the course.
Do we expect any different from the Arabs? Because, I mean, basically, he led by the front, didn't he? He was one of those people that he led his troops forward and crushed the Arabs who wanted to totally annihilate Israel. Well, it didn't quite turn out that way. The Six-Day War, more than like a five-day war, because as soon as the Israelis went on the attack, the Arabs scattered everywhere, and they was totally outnumbered. The Israelis were outnumbered, something like, I think, guys, I might be wrong, but it's like 100-1 or something like that, maybe more, 200, I don't know, but it doesn't matter, but they just legged it. I don't know, it was the force of Israel, the way that they went about business was a total, what can we say in the military terms, it was just unbelievable, the way they went about their business, Tim. Unbelievable.
The Israelis had complete commitment to what they did. I mean, I suppose it helps in the way that when your back is against the wall, you fight for your life, and that's the way that the Israelis always have fought. They fought for their lives because their very lives depended on it. They knew that they had to put everything they possibly could in there. So they gathered everything they could and attacked or defended themselves as hard as they could. Whereas the Arabs just don't think in those terms. The Arabs think that because they're told in the Quran that they are superior, and they think that's all there is to it, and they think that everybody should treat them as superior. But of course, in reality, they have no moral fibre at all, by and large.
No,
and they have no sense of fighting for something that, in the way that the Israelis had to do so. When you value something that much, and you know that if you don't give it everything, that you could lose it totally, then you will win if you're put in a corner that you can't get out of it. The only way you can get out of is by fighting for what you've got to in order to retain it, then you'll win eventually. And that's what the Israelis did. And that's what they do generally when you see them fighting. They give it everything. And that's what makes them so strong.
That's what I say. The difference between the Israelis, which is a fine military outfit as such, but it's with the Israelis, it was... they was fighting for life, and the Arabs were fighting for death, because they don't worry about if they die. They don't worry what that part of it. But the Israelis, it's like we're the most freedom-loving people. We love life, don't we, guys? This is what it is, and we will do our best to defend it, whatever, to our last drop of blood. And that's what the Israelis was. They was right. Let's just get on
it. What the Israelis did in the Six-Day War is that they knew that the Arabs were coming. They knew that the Syrians and the Jordanians and the Egyptians was going to strike with an armoured force. So what they did is, an hour before the actual invasion began, they sent their aircraft in to bomb these tanks, take out the bridges, knock out the communication. So when the Arabs did go in, they were completely unaware of it because the Israelis attacked them all first. So basically, after Israel got, Jordan just surrendered after about an hour, didn't they?
It wasn't that long, was it, Tom?
Well, basically, Israel well out of the Six-Day War, because they got the Golan Heights from Syria and they got the Sinai Principle from Egypt. When the Yom Kippur War broke out in 73, when the attacks again, Israel had to change the tactics, because this time they had the latest in Soviet armament. They had a better anti-aircraft defense, better jets than the Israelis had. So basically what the Israelis had to do is optimize that. And they got to bear in mind, Egypt had 200 tanks and Israel had 36. So what it is, they let them into the Sinai Peninsula and the Kafars, and so when the Egyptian tanks came along in a nice neat row, take out the lead tank, take out the back tank, and that was it. It was easy pickings. And eventually, these tanks went out of anti-aircraft range for their Egyptian anti-aircraft defence. That's when they sent the planes back in. That's when, what's his name? What was the Egyptian president's name? I can't remember.
Was it Nasser? I'm trying to think now.
He even said that they can't win war against Israel.
Wasn't that Nasser? Gamal Nasser, I think.
That's it. And he even said after the Yom Kippur, like, there's no way they will ever be able to knock out Israel.
As I say, but we're such a day, I'm giving a bit of a salute to that's a very, very brave warrior who stood his ground. And, of course, he was highly respected. I mean, you know, he's not going to get no respect from the Arabs because, the Arabs, they just want to totally wipe, Israel clean off the map. Oh, we know that. That's always been their plan, is to totally annihilate little Israel. Tim and Tommy, I don't know if you've ever checked it out, how small the land is what they've got.
Pamela Geller on the show, Jeff, and she even said that Israel poses no strategic or resourceful gain from its domination. It's all about because they're a Jewish nation. That's the reason why it's got no strategic industry. It's got no resources that would benefit them. Look here, it's only about 10 miles wide and about 75 miles long. That's
I know. That's what I'm saying to him. It's only a small bit of land. I'm just noticing what Findalis is putting in the text, and she's saying, funny how Burke and Michelle went to Mandela's funeral but can't go to Sharon's. Hmm. Yeah, it's quite obvious. That's just something that Findalis has written the text.
Yeah, why doesn't that surprise me? It sort of fits in with Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's agenda, doesn't it? Every time Mandela, he was just all right. A lot of people say he was a great man, but he was a terrorist back in the 1960s, and that's why he got 27 years in prison. All right, it could be argued that in the intervening time, politics in South Africa changed and eventually created the circumstances where he achieved high office.
But he was still a terrorist, as you say,
too,
no matter what.
He was still a terrorist.
A terrorist is a terrorist, isn't it?
Yeah, and they had no problem going to his funeral, but it just fits in with their agenda, which is they seem to pick the wrong side every time when it comes to the forces of freedom compared to the forces of evil.
Yeah. And
the fact that they don't want to go to Sharon's funeral doesn't surprise me.
And also, we mustn't forget that they also missed Margaret Thatcher's funeral too. As well, she was a great stateswoman, should I say.
Well, there's a number of things like this, and I saw only today somebody posted something on Facebook about Barack Obama being the only president to miss 3 years in a row of I forget exactly what the day was, but it was a memorial day for fallen soldiers from the United States. And he missed that three years in a row.
I
he just seems to pick the wrong side every time. Sorry?
Yeah, I think it's disgraceful. And, do you think that people don't forget that, you know, they do things? I mean, most presidents we've had of that before the Obama regime, you know, any sort of state funerals, anything like that, they would always be in attendance, always. If not, they would send someone, one of their high-profile ambassadors, you know, but the Obama regime, they don't really care, do they? Let's be honest, they don't care unless it fits their agenda. And just what
I agree with you. They certainly don't. I don't want to get started on a rant about it today because I know we've got other subjects to talk about. But I really do think it's appalling that they can flout the Constitution in the way that they do. I'm talking about Barack and Michelle between them. One is just as bad as the other. I know Barack is nominally the president of the United States, but I mean he doesn't behave like it, and he shouldn't be there. And I just feel so sorry for the fact that it seems so difficult for the American people to get him impeached. I understand why that's the case because I had it explained to me that the impeachment process means you've got to get an awful lot of the Democrats involved, and they're not going to get involved because the way he's going will probably keep the Democrats in power for a long time. So their self-interest is overriding the interests of the people and the traditions and the values of the United States. And so I just feel terribly, terribly sorry for the American people. And I know I'm not an American myself.
Yeah, they deserve much better, don't they, Tim? Also, I've got Agador also saying, Jeff, frankly, lately the Canadian government has been acting better than the states in these matters. It's about respect. Yeah. And do you know what, Agador? I would totally agree with that statement you said there. Totally. And it seems a shame because, you know, it's only because of the Obama regime that this is come about. But good point there, Agador, you know, and it is true. The Canadian government has been acting better than the states in these matters, and I think most of us know this. And it's just I feel sorry for the good American people because they feel it as well, don't they?
I think anything we could do to support them, we should, but it is a terrible thing.
Guys, we are part of controversial street protest patriotic movements.
Sorry, didn't catch that last bit, Tommy.
We're all protest movements. independent, quote unquote, there.
So you're dropping out a bit, Tommy. I didn't catch that again.
Hold on, let me sort this out. Right. We're all controversial.
Didn't get it, Tommy. You're definitely dropping out.
I'll call back.
That's very, very interesting. What was stated there, like, you know. Kel, your thoughts, I mean, about that, the way that the Obama regime has been acting, would you say that Canada's been acting much better in funerals, this, that and the other? And it does seem to be, as Agador said, that does seem to be the case. And as I say, it must be a bit distasteful for the American people that, the good Americans would like to see, you know, their president taking part in some of these state funerals. And
Canada under the Harper administration, Prime Minister Stephen Harper, has always been a staunch ally of Israel. And I believe that Stephen Harper, if he is not going to attend himself, he is going to send our Foreign Affairs Minister, John Baird, to attend the funeral of Ariel Sharon. And Prime Minister Stephen Harper had a lot of very kind words to say about Prime Minister Sharon, in that he called him an architect of the Middle East nation he once staunchly defended. Now, like I had aforementioned, Canada is a staunch ally of Israel. We will always stand beside Israel in any dealings, anything going on. Canada, the Canadian government does not recognize Palestine as a state, and what's going on right now in terms of that, I understand that there's more brokering going on at this moment, but Prime Minister Stephen Harper had very, very warm words for Ariel Sharon. He referred to him as a renowned military leader. Mr. Sharon pursued the security of Israel with unyielding determination that was recognized by friends and foes alike. Harper also said that Sharon played a central role in the Israeli government for several years, changing the political landscape through his leadership and vision. Harper went on to say, "We join today with those mourning the loss of Ariel Sharon, one of the architects of modern-day Israel and one of the nation's staunchest defenders." And that is a message to the people of Israel from Canada.
There you go. Thank you, Kel. I was just wondering, because we have got a music clip, I think down near the bottom, Kel, and I can't remember what it's called at the moment, but it's in support of Israel and the Israeli people, and I can't remember. Do you know which one I'm talking about, Kel? I was wondering if we should play this in respect of a great fallen military leader of the times and that, and a great man.
I have it right in front of me, Jeff. Whenever you want me to click on it, we'll play it whenever you're ready.
Okay, Kel. Okay. Yeah, so I think it's quite right that we show our respect for this great man. Great statesman and also a great military leader, a great warrior all around, a great warrior. So with that, Kel, I will go for my break anyway, but if you can do the honours there, it'd be really appreciated. And we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, after this little bit of music, which represents Ariel Sharon and, of course, the great people of Israel as well. So there you go, Kel.
As the world turns around, history repeats itself again and again. As the world turns around, we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. Stand with Israel. betrayer. A merry-go-round betrayer. The devil's got himself a new disguise, wearing the mask of democracy right before our eyes. Business out in today, a race fueling the flame. The face of evil flies no flag while waging this unholy war. Islam and the socialists side by side, like the Nazis and Iranians in 1935. Challenge you to debate social justice or caliphate. Can socialism coincide with genocide? You deny.
The world turns a blind eye.
History repeats itself again and again.
As the world turns a blind eye,
we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. Stand with Israel,
side by side with Israel.
No one prepared for what they had in store,
until blood from the dead bodies washed up on the shore.
So many lives lost, remember the Holocaust.
An evil never seen before, we saw would never happen again.
Such pretty features the world adores,
but it's the content of his character that cannot be ignored.
Again, Hezbollah, on the faith we don't fulfill.
Stabilize, reorganize, until it's time they settle.
As the world turns a blind eye,
history repeats itself again.
And as the world turns a blind eye,
we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Israel.
We stand with Israel. The lines are being drawn in the sand, and now we know exactly where he stands.
Mocking democracy, diplomacy,
agitating the arrest as history's repeated.
As the world turns a blind eye,
socialists, commies, and Islamic fascists have all realigned.
As the world turns a blind eye,
it's 2011, are we gonna regress back to 67?
As the world turns a blind eye,
as goes the plight of Israel, so goes the Western way of life.
As the world turns a blind eye,
stand with Israel.
Stand with Israel.
And there you go. And hey, Jeff. Well, we're still talking about the issue of Canada and its relationship with Israel. I put a link in the chat room. There is more good news from Canada, and this is from yesterday. In Canada, the federal court, they upheld a government decision to cut funding to the Canadian Arab Federation for their support of terrorism and anti-Semitism. And that happened in Canada. The federal court ruled yesterday that the Canadian Arab Federation will no longer be eligible for federal funding.
Absolutely. What brilliant news from Canada. I think a round of applause for the Canadians for doing that, showing a lot of hindsight there and leading the way. Well, if we had that little soundbite of a clap, I would have give the Canadian people a good clap. There you go. Well done, guys. And it's just, we just wish that other nations would see common sense and do the same. Put these people out of business. Cut the money, the funding and that. It's the only way. What's your thoughts on that, Tim? Cut all these funding to these groups.
Well, I agree entirely. I mean, for far too long, Western governments have had the wool pulled over their eyes by organisations that have been promoting a totally false narrative in order to get funding for all sorts of things which ultimately are against the long-term interests of the country. I mean, that's just one example, and I'm very pleased to hear it. But there are lots and lots of other organisations that have been doing very similar things in different countries in the West. And I'm for some reason, the organisation that comes to mind at the moment in this country is an organisation which promotes which looks out for online hate crime, and its name is Tell Mama UK, and it has funding. It has funding in this
Stop
country.
Stop tweeting me as well, Tell Mama. They all
well,
quite. Tweet me.
Well, quite. I mean, with Tell Mama UK, of course, that was founded on the totally false narrative of Islam being a benign, tolerant and peaceful religion, and therefore anybody who speaks out against Islam must therefore be a hateful, bigoted, racist, intolerant Islamophobe. And our government's been only too happy to fall for this narrative, which is totally false, and I'm hoping that someday, not too far in the future, we will see some common sense returning, and that funding will be discontinued, and these organisations will fade away from the scene. But there are a lot of them, and they are in every Western country, and they, at the moment, they have the ear of the political elites, and it's something that we have to keep speaking out against.
And we must speak out, because the money, where does it go, Tim? Where does it end up funding
well,
these terrorists, isn't it?
Well,
Let's
it
be
does,
honest.
Yeah, it does, a lot of the money.
And buying the bullets and missiles to kill our soldiers and all the people that fight freedom and liberty and all the good things that we adhere to. So all the time people want to keep giving money to these people, all they're doing is maybe bringing death and destruction to our military men and women who are out there fighting a good fight. So that's what I'm saying. We must always speak out against these groups of people, because we know that a lot of the money gets funded off to these terrorist organisations, and that goes to better their cause and to get more bullets, more guns, more missiles, and then to carry on their merry way. Let's stop their food chain, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's good to see Canadians.
They do take quite a lot of care to try and hide the money trail, but the fact is that a lot of the funding that these organisations get does end up buying military weaponry that actually gets used against our troops in foreign countries. So yes, the more we can stamp down on this kind of thing, the better. I'm not just talking about charities. I'm talking about the reason I say charities is, of course, there was a big one in the United States a few years ago, which I think was the Holy Land Foundation, which was found to be routing money for terrorist purposes. And I think CARE, in particular, the Council of American Islamic Relations, was compromised in the trial that the Holy Land Foundation was eventually convicted for. All people who were running that organization were convicted for. So that was a charity in particular. But I'm thinking in this country, there are a lot of organizations, not necessarily charities, but organizations that have been ostensibly set up to help. In the case of Tell Mama UK that we were talking about just now, it was ostensibly set up to help the cause of community cohesion, but in fact it does anything but, because it's founded on a false narrative. And our political elites have bought into it. The very last thing that actually happens as a result of that organisation being there is any good going towards the cause of community cohesion. But in the meantime, they're taking the money, taxpayers' money, and they're using it in the most nefarious ways.
I was going to say, Tim, just to expand a little bit on some of these groups, these organisations like CARE. Are you in the same mindset as myself and probably CARE and a lot of other people? Why hasn't this been closed down? Why hasn't this been shut down? What about the Muslim Brotherhood? Why haven't they been shut down?
Well,
can you understand the reason why they're still there? Why are they still there?
Well, I can give you plenty of general reasons, which in this politically correct and multicultural environment that we find ourselves in, anything that might be seen to be going against the interests of Muslims, people are afraid to touch it anyway, because no matter what their career might be, if they're seen to be racist or Islamophobic or in any way, that can be a career killer. Some sectors are more prone to this than others. I mean, for example, if you're in local or national government and you're seen to be racist or Islamophobic, or you're stuck with that label, that can be a career killer. Certainly in the educational sector.
But would you not say that's really unfair, though, Tim, to actually have that label as being an Islamophobe and racist?
I mean,
because as we got to state it loud and clear. Ladies and gentlemen, Islam is not a race. Muslims are not a race, you see, and this is what I'm saying. It's what's the word? It's a travesty of words, isn't it? You know, to class people, because you speak out against this cult.
You speak out against it, you become an
Islamophobe, a racist. I'm not a racist. I know Tim's not, and most people are listening to this show or not.
I think we've more or less put it to bed, the fact that Islam is not a race, and therefore it is wrong to call us racists for criticising Islam. But I'm trying to promote a slightly different line when I talk about this to people now, because first of all it was you're a racist, and that would shut down conversation. Then it was
that's right.
If you're not a racist, you must be an Islamophobe, and then that was used to shut down the conversation. But I'm finding that an effective way of coming back to people is to explain to them that we have been sold a pup. We have been sold a false narrative. The whole of all the political elites and the mainstream media and everybody authority over the last 20 or 30 years who've been infected with political correctness and multiculturalism have been, as a result, sold a pup. They've been sold a false narrative which basically says Islam is a benign and tolerant religion, and therefore to criticize it must mean that you're a terrible, bigoted, hateful, intolerant Islamophobe. Now, that whole narrative needs to change, and people need to understand that the entity, the ideology that is Islam, is not first and foremost a religion. It is first and foremost a political ideology. And once you accept that, then an awful lot of things which might have been causing you a little cognitive dissonance, shall we say, all start to fall into place. And when you realize that the primary goal of Islam is to through totalitarian methods and using fear, violence, terror and intimidation, the goal is to take over the world by whatever means possible, force included, then it all falls into place. Everything that you see going on around you suddenly makes sense. Whereas previously, I'm sure there are still plenty of people out there that have cognitive dissonance when on the one hand they're being told Islam's the benign and tolerant religion of peace. On the other hand, they're seeing what Muslims are doing around the world on a daily basis doesn't quite seem to match that description. And the reason is that the description is wrong. And once you...
it's a misconception, isn't it? It's a whole thing. It's what we always speak about on the show. It's just trying to better the lie, because we know the best thing a Muslim can do is lie better than the next Muslim. And it was going back a little while ago, there was one of their own clerics said that in Islam, if you can tell a bigger lie than the next Muslim, then you're a better person. Now, this is the way that they they do business. It's to lie and continue to lie, to try to say, I mean, the biggest lie is that Islam is a religion of peace. It's the biggest lie ever mentioned, isn't it? The religion of peace. The religion of peace. Yeah,
well,
right.
The problem is, and we have touched on this before, the problem is that the way the words are defined in Judeo-Christian civilization is quite different than the way they're defined in Islamic civilization. And the reason that Muslims can stand in front of you and tell you with a straight face that Islam is a religion of peace is what they mean is when all opposition to Islam has been thoroughly destroyed, when every infidel has been converted or has been subjugated or has been slaughtered, then peace peace will reign and Islam will rule the world, and therefore that is why Islam is a religion of peace, and that is what they mean when they say Islam is peaceful. And it's quite different from what we say when we talk about something being peaceful or not being peaceful. And the same is true of other words that relate to Islam in a similar way. For example, tolerant. Muslims think that Islam is tolerant because when non-Muslims are in their place, which is to say as third-class citizens and paying the jizya, subject to being thoroughly humiliated and so on, then Islam will tolerate them. And that's why a Muslim can look you in the face and say Islam is tolerant, because his definition of tolerance is quite different from the definition of tolerance that we use in Judeo-Christian terms. We understand it to be live and let live, understanding there may be differences between people, but living with those differences as long as we're not actively being persecuted. But Muslims don't look at it that way at all. And that's why...
No, they don't. No, it's a totally different perspective to the rest of the world. I'd also like to say that the jizya tax, whatever they want to call it, really, truthfully, it comes down to it's a humiliation tax. That's basically, if you look at it in cold light day, that is really what it is. You've been humiliated. You pay a tax because you are a lower class than us. We're better than you. That is the way that they try to put it over, isn't it? Just like that, Tim. You know,
There's no sense of compromise or negotiation or living in peace equals in perpetuity. And it's important to define that, because when a Muslim says to you, all we want to do is to live in peace with everybody, they don't mean as equals in perpetuity. They will tolerate living side by side with you until they are strong enough to take over, and then they'll slaughter you, as we have seen in Syria. That is what they will do. If they ever get the upper hand here in the way that they have in Syria, they will slaughter us. And it will be a bloodbath in our streets, with Muslims slaughtering non-Muslims if they get the opportunity. And
we've got to say that if because the good people of this country, like ourselves, Tim, we were not just going to stand back and let people do that to our people and our nation. It's not going to happen, not on our watch anyway.
Watches. Yeah, but that's what you have to be extremely careful of, because Muslims will go out of their way to try and emphasize how peaceful Islam is, but peace is the word is does not have the same connotation, does not have the same meaning that we have in our civilization. And that's a very, very important thing that many people miss. And although we have discussed it previously, it bears repeating. Because Muslims
all we got to say to our listeners, when you hear them say this is a religion of peace, please investigate it yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Don't take our word for it. I mean,
we all say that. Please
investigate. You know, and then at the end of it, check yourself. There's so many links, so many things you can see about this so-called religion of peace. Then think about it. And think, in maybe you see what we see, that it is just a play on words, that it doesn't bear no similarity to a religion of peace whatsoever, guys. But you've got to come to your own, you know, you've got to make your own mind up. And that's what we say. Please check it out yourselves. I mean, we speak because we know, we studied it, and we know that this isn't anything but a religion of peace. Is that right, Sim?
Well, it is absolutely right. But the important thing is to make sure that when you're talking about this, that the definitions are explored and explained in the way that we've just done now. I mean, if somebody says to you, well, Muslims do fight other people, but of course they only do it defensively, what they really mean is that they will only fight other people if they feel that they're being oppressed. And what most people fail to understand is that the very fact that you and I are living on Allah's earth, breathing Allah's oxygen, is an affront to Muslims. Muslims are offended by our presence, and therefore our presence on this earth, breathing Allah's oxygen, gives them all the pretext they need to declare war on us. And that is why they say that they only declare war defensively, because you know they wouldn't do it unless they were offended. Well, just us just being here offends them, and that's why they feel they have the right to declare war on us in the way they do. So even things like that, where a Muslim might say to you, "Well, Islam does not." They often talk about context in the Quran when it comes to declaring war on non-Muslims. A lot of Muslims tell me that it's only defensive warfare. Well, if you can't define the words defensive and offensive properly, then you might well fall for that particular line of explanation given to you by a Muslim when he's trying to tell you ultimately how peaceful Islam really is. But if you define the terms correctly, then you can see how a Muslim can still say something like that to you with a straight face, even though he means completely the opposite of what you would mean by the same words. So that is a very important thing to remember.
I mean, we've got to come back to with Robert Spencer and that imam that was on that radio show, Tim.
Oh, that was
Radio Asia, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that was a real hoot.
If you've never listened to something so funny of a Muslim sort of debating with Robert Spencer, that's the audio you want to listen to, because in the heat of the engagement of the debate, this guy turned around and said, "Well, Robert, you know more about this than me because it's your field, isn't that?" That's what he said.
Yeah, that's right.
You know more about it.
Yeah, that was hilarious. An actual admission.
The interviewer said, "But he said you're an imam. You should know." He said, "But no, it's his field. He knows more about it than me."
Most of the people who appear on this show, I would argue, know far more about Islam than your actual average Muslim does. A lot of Muslims they start learning about the Quran in Arabic, and they're taught the Arabic words in the Quran. And a lot of people, by the time they're 11 or 12 years old, can recite the Quran in Arabic, and they're very proud of that. If they get to be able to do that, they're called a Hafiz. Not to say that they actually understand one word of it. You and I not only understand the meaning of a lot of the verses that are in the Quran, I mean, you and I can dissect those verses and explain them to people
that's exactly what we do.
We help people understand the meaning behind what is in the Quran, and that helps you to understand why things are happening in the way that they are in the world today. Because a lot of people look at what's happening and they say, I just can't get my head around what's happening with Islam in the world today. It just seems like they're always fighting, and yet it's supposed to be a religion of peace. I can't be doing with it. I'll go and think about something else, which is a normal human reaction. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I don't want to criticize people who feel that way because, as I've said before, it's a great big scary subject when you first look at it. Like any other big scary subject, I referred to it on previous shows as it's like eating an elephant. You have to do it one mouthful at a time, one little mouthful at a time, and then you can eventually eat that elephant. But you take little bits in turn and explain them, and after a bit it all starts to make sense. But in order for it to make sense, you have to look at it in a way that gives you greater understanding than your average Muslim in the street, because the average Muslim in the street only knows what he's been told by his imam. And if his imam says, "Well, it's peaceful," your average Muslim will probably just parrot that line to anybody
what they do, isn't it? How many debates we had, and they're just parroting what they're remembering, what I said, and they don't understand the whole context of what they're saying anyway. And that's the thing. That's the reason why we don't find too many who want to debate with us on the issues of Islam. They don't want to, because we can sort of rebuttal whatever they say. We can actually just go head to head with them. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times we can shoot them down. We can shoot them down because of the certain things they say, and they fall into the trap every time. They can't help it.
Well, yeah.
They can't help it.
If you've got a basic level of understanding, you should be able to shoot people down, certainly 9 out of 10 times. The 10th person might be a little bit more skilled in taqiyya.
Yes.
And then it becomes a little bit... a little bit harder to pin them down. I mean,
I've met a few of them in my science, I've got to admit.
Here's a couple of good examples who I'm sure you will know. Mo Ansar, Mehdi Hassan, Tariq Ramadan, three people who are very skilled in taqiyya. And if you say to them, Islam does this or doesn't do that, they will argue black is white and with a straight face. And it's pure
yes, they do.
I mean, I'm sure we don't need to be reminded of the time that Mo Ansar stood in front of a room full of EDL people and said Islam is not homophobic in any way. I think Tommy can tell us all about that, can't you, Tommy? But
yes.
But that was just one example. That's just one example. And it's not that they are more intelligent or that they have a better grasp of Islam than we do. It's just they are better skilled sometimes they are skilled at taqiyya, and they can deflect your arguments to the point where you can't immediately come back. You might have to do a bit of research and then come back at a later stage, but by that time they've gone on to do something else. So
but would you not say, I mean, that statement that Al Mansour made that time in front, as you say, in front of some EDL some of our EDL members, it shot himself in the foot with that statement, because as we all know, ladies and gentlemen, all of us know that they don't preach any tolerance to homosexuals. I mean, you can see what they feel. You see the imams actually preaching that with homosexuals, they should be taken to the top of a mountain and thrown off. And this is how they look at homosexuals, don't they, Tim?
Well,
people like Al Mansour tries to deflect that argument.
And
imams be saying that. Sorry,
I was just going to say, Mo Ansar, first and foremost, his duty is to defend Islam against the evil kuffar. And if you realise that that is his first duty, and that duty comes above telling the truth, then it all falls into place. And so when he says that Islam is not homophobic with a straight face, what you have to realise is that if he were to tell the truth, he would actually be contributing to people understanding Islam, and thus Islam would be defamed.
So he's got to lie. So what you're saying, he's got to cover up.
And when you understand that, it all falls into place. And this is why Muslims lie, because to tell the truth in many circumstances would be to defame Islam, or to cause Islam to be defamed, to be thought less of, and a Muslim cannot allow that. And so if the alternative is lying, a Muslim will lie, and he will do it with a straight face, with a clear conscience, because in Islamic doctrine, he is allowed to lie if it preserves the dignity of Islam, or if it advances Islam, or if it prevents Islam being defamed. And that's an important thing to remember whenever you're talking to a Muslim about Islam, that the truth is secondary.
Yeah. Well said, Tim, and yeah, Legend, that is so right, what Tim's saying. You must always remember that most of the time, if you are in a debate, that they are doing their best to lie to you, to hoodwink you, and to deflect. You know, I used to call it the Muzzy Shuffle, because when they got a bit uncomfortable, they start moving around, jumping around, and then deflecting, and then start being insulting and calling your mother names and things like that. This is how it tends to go sometimes. When they're losing the argument, they do get rather offensive, don't they? Tim, and this is what I've known on quite a few occasions, and an army will back me up, because I've had so many debates with these people, and it starts off all nice, and everybody's happy-go-lucky, and then after, you know, just a couple of searching sort of questions, they start falling apart, and then all the, you know, they start being abusive, and but that's what we've—that's what I found myself personally, Tim. I don't know about yourself, and I don't know about anybody else that's been in any sort of debates. But that's sometimes they put a good fight up. Some of them are really quite, you know, keep the respect and don't go down that path. They try to keep on a level path, you know. That's quite interesting.
I was going to say, I don't want to take up too much time on this subject, because I did notice that Kel's dropped a little comment in the chat room saying, Tim and Jeff have got the show well under control. I fed my pets, did a load of laundry, and have driven to the market. So I think that's a hint that we should maybe be moving on a bit.
Kel's very much multitasking as well, and she's marvellous there, Kel. But I was going to say, Tim, there was a birthday this Friday from one of our ROs, and that's called Glenn Slapper, and it's something that's that Carol's got. I think she might have a little bit of music that she's going to play in a second. So, Kel, sorry to take a little bit of time there. I'm glad you've done your chores and what you had to do, because as I say, me and Tim was covering a lot of ground.
Oh, and I'm also making supper upstairs.
There you go. Tim, we haven't got this multitasking worked out.
Well, I have a lot of respect for women in general, and Kel in particular. When it comes to multitasking, she is an absolute star. And I had a little difficulty last week, and people have often told me that you shouldn't. This is saying to me, I shouldn't talk, think, and chew gum at the same time. And when I try and do that, I get into a bit of a pickle. So we had a little incident last week where that happened. So I have to take my hat off to Kel and give her a little bit of kudos here to say that when it comes to multitasking, she is the best.
She's fantastic.
Thank you. And you know what? When it comes to the tech end of Blog Talk Radio, I'm not the best, but I'm actually pretty good. And just to explain what Tim means by that, ladies and gentlemen, is that Tim was a guest on the Audrey Russell show, Real to Real, on Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. You can find it in archive. And Tim was trying to call in, and he was not meeting with success. And I had 14 million windows open, and I got him on Skype, and I said, hang up the landline, get out of there completely, refresh the page, go here, Skype in.
and it all worked.
There you go. And that's what it's about.
That's the kind of thing I do.
I
work
behind
the scenes.
It's just nice to know that we've got people like Kel there.
Exactly.
I try to keep things going smoothly, but one thing I could not control tonight was that we lost Tommy, and that kind of makes me sad because I had a little song for him. But one thing we do have to acknowledge, Jeff and Tim, is that our very dear friend Glenn Saffer has a birthday today.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Glenn.
I think it was Friday,
Glenn.
I think it was.
Oh, right.
Today. No, his birthday's today.
Today?
Yeah, and he'll be listening in archive later on. So I have a little something here for Glenn. And Glenn, we hope you have a very happy birthday. I have a little parable for you that I want to share with you. Glenn, you be your own in your own right. You find your way. And Glenn, it shouldn't be hard to find your way with all those candles. I'm being a brat. And here, Glenn, this is for you.
Happy birthday to happy birthday to happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to
birthday to you.
Yeah.
joke, Glenn. Happy birthday, brother. Anyway, come on, I've just seen someone. I've seen someone pop in. I've just seen him pop up. And that's Richard Millington. Can you take his name, please, girl? Take his name.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Richard. You know what, though? Richard was a little late, but the thing is that he has shown up with very, very shiny buttons and shiny shoes. So I think if I'm going to take his name, I'm only going to do it in pencil so that we can erase it.
I don't know. He's got one of his laces off undone there, girl. Take his name anyway.
There you go. Oh, I love what Bigfoot just said in the chat room. Being an old fart myself, I can appreciate large numbers of candles and the accompanying dangers.
Bigfoot. Oh, that's thank you, bro. You're not that old, mate. You're not that old. I feel ancient myself, but, you're as old as what you feel, isn't that right, Tim? You're as old as you feel.
Yeah,
keep
something
young
something,
and beautiful.
Yes, I think that's the phrase.
Anyway,
yes.
That's it, Tim. But, as I say, Kel, was there something else that we wanted to discuss this tonight on the show? Was there something else we was going to talk about this evening? So, something that maybe we was talking about the other night and we thought we'd use the Sunday show to speak about something. Was it something to do with Canada? I can't remember now.
Oh,
I've got a short term memory.
Yeah, we got a lot of material from Canada covered. Yeah, I just wanted to briefly bring up an issue that's going on at York University in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, in that there was a student that wanted special accommodation. He's taking an online sociology course, but they have to get together and engage in workshops. What was going on is that he sent a letter to the professor and said that, I really don't want to be around the women. It's against my religious practices. It has not been disclosed what his religion is. He could be a Hasidic Jew or he could be a Muslim. They're not disclosing that, but come on, folks. Give me
we
a
know
break.
He's a Muslim, don't we, Kel?
Yeah. So this professor, he took it to two imam scholars, and he took it to a Judea scholar, and all three of them came back to him and they said there's absolutely no reason why he cannot partake in the workshop with the female with the female co-classmates. So the professor, well, before he did all this, what he did is that he took it to the York University board and he said, look, I need your help in putting together a statement in which in how to address this. The higher-ups, they said, no, accommodate him. Then the professor went to the scholars, and they came back to him and said, no, there's no reason why he should not be able to partake in the workshop. So the professor got back to the student and said, no, you will partake in the workshop with the female students. The student got back and said, oh, okay, fine, no problem. Thank you very much for your interest in your handling of the situation. So whether or not this particular student was fulfilling his religious duties in a token protest, we don't know. But the student was fine with it. He did attend the workshop with the female students, and everything was all very good, all very well. But the higher-ups came back to the professor and said, no, you have to recognize his religious accommodation. You have to do this. And the professor is just confounded by this in that he doesn't know what to do with it. So there is, it's going on right now. The professor has to either realign his curriculum come the January semester, or he will have to appeal it, and we're not sure what.
Well, I would, you know, he knows that it's that he's not going to accommodate that sort of situation. And I'm probably the same as you and probably Tim. Stand your ground. Stand your ground on it. You know, if he doesn't want to participate in a workshop with other ladies and all this excuse because of his religious beliefs, whatever, There's no excuse for it as far as I'm concerned. And if he doesn't want to take part, then don't take part. There you go, don't take part. Why should the professor accommodate just him? You know, when you've got a workshop with her, it's got full of people probably, no one else is worried about it. So why must he? It's just making a statement. That's what they do all the time. They make these statements and try to push it and push it for the better of Islam. You know, that we know what it's all about. It's you know, it's just the way that they go about business, isn't it? Any way they can do it, they do it. You know, going to school, it was like in the UK. Tim remembers this very well, don't you, Tim? When that teacher went that time for a job at the school that she was going to. Now, she went and sat and had an interview with, I think it was a headmaster and the deputy head, and there was another teacher, I can't remember exactly who it was, but she went in traditional Western gear. She didn't mention anything about religious beliefs, this, that, and the other. Let's go back a few years
ago. Well, that's
ago
what
now,
they
so
always
probably,
do. That's what they always
and
do, Jeff. It's always
the
like
thing about it is,
the litmus
Kel,
test. It's always a litmus
say,
test with these folks.
You see, but she went in traditional, you know, Western gear, you know, whatever skirt, whatever, you know, she was, whatever she was wearing. But when she turned up, when they give her the job, well, okay, you can start, and then she had a starting date. When she turned up, guess what? She was dressed like a big bloody
she
pig.
She was wearing the hijab.
The lot,
yeah.
Everything.
And
the,
Jeff,
you know,
I have a clip here. I have a clip here if you want me to play it. It's from CTV, and they're talking about this York University student and his request to abstain from interacting with the women. If you want me to play a little bit of that.
Yes, please, Kel.
Yeah, just before you play that, Kel and I were talking about this very subject a day or two ago, and I said I would go away and find a link to another article which was referring to a professor who came under sustained pressure from a couple of Muslim students in his class, and I couldn't at the time. I couldn't actually pull the link that I wanted, but I've actually found it now. And while you're playing that little bit of while you're playing that clip, I'll put the link in the chat room, and then our listeners can have a look at that clip and bookmark it if they think it's appropriate. But it was to do with a college professor in Texas, and a couple of Muslim students in his class complained, and the way in which they did it was very underhanded. And I won't go into it now because I'll let you play that clip, but I'll put the link into the chat room. But it's a similar kind of story to the one that you've just been describing.
Oh, okay,
thank
sure.
You,
thanks.
Tim.
Okay,
thank
so
you
that's on its
yes.
way.
And just
thanks,
to let
Abby.
Everybody know, the professor who told the student that under no circumstances will you be abstaining from the course, he is Professor J. Paul Grayson. He was a guest on News Talk 1010 as well. And CTV Canada is discussing this. And here we go, Jeff and Tim.
Thank you, Kel.
A case of religious accommodation at York University in Ontario has sparked some debate over what rights both students and teachers have. A male student requested to be separated from his female classmates because of religious reasons. He did not state what his religion was, but the professor was adamant that he would not concede to that request. The student didn't put up a fight and actually agreed to participate alongside women, but the professor found himself at odds with the university administration, who told him to make it clear to the student that he did not have to work with women. With us this morning to talk more about this issue is employment lawyer Natalie McDonald. So good to have you here.
Thank you, Marcy. Thank you for having me today.
So we just explained a little bit about this case. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, I think this situation is particularly distressing due to the discriminatory nature of the request. Really, what the gentleman was asking for was to not be in a room with women. And, of course, that unto itself was discriminatory in the sense that it marginalizes women. It has the impact of marginalizing women. And this type of situation is not what happens in Canada, nor should it happen in Canada. So the fact that the accommodation request was even granted at one point is preposterous.
Does religion have a role here, though? Because he says it's his religion, although we don't know which religion it is.
Right.
He says it's a religious situation.
Well, I believe that that's what he cloaked it as. I'm not aware of a religion actually allowing that. But the fact is, this type of request having been made is the issue, and the fact that it was granted is the issue. Because if it is granted, this is going to open up Pandora's box for anyone who doesn't want to interact with anyone else to be able to come forward and say that they don't want to do so on the basis of religion, sexual orientation, creed, or race. And the fact is, we have a human rights code in place to protect against that. Now, if we translate that to the workplace, we may have employees who are sitting in cubicles who are saying, well, I don't want to interact with this person based on the fact that my religion doesn't allow it. Mm. I mean, what are we opening up here? Yeah.
The ramifications are huge.
They are.
What about the dean?
What about the dean?
The dean with this York University situation,
well,
and his stance in the first place.
Well, I mean, I can't really comment as to what the dean, you know, decided or why the dean decided to grant the accommodation request. But the fact is, when I deal with employers and employees, as my partner Stuart Rudner and I do, we deal with accommodation requests on a very regular basis. And if that accommodation request is not reasonable to begin with, then it's not granted. And if the employer does not grant accommodation where there is a reasonable request, then you could have extraordinary damages if the employee decides to bring a lawsuit based on non-accommodation or refusal to accommodate. But in this case, that's not what happened at all. The request itself should never, ever have been granted. And that's the real concern that I think most Canadians are looking at today.
Ms. McDonald, great to have you in on this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcia. It's a pleasure.
And I thought that would be interesting to bring up in
I think that was an absolutely great clip, Kel. And it just it sums up everything that we was talking about because what it does, it brings up. I always think of when we don't want to be working with women or because of religion, I always been looking at it as like an apartheid, isn't it? It's creating that you're segregated from women, and women have got to be that sort. It's like what happened at that university a little while ago over here, wasn't it, Tim? Where that guy walked out because the way that they was trying, women sat there, the men sat there, and he said he didn't like that. He walks out of
can't bring it to mind, but he was due to give a talk and he wouldn't give a talk because of the segregation which had been sprung on them by the student organisers, and he just said, well, you know, if you're going to indulge in this kind of ridiculous behaviour, segregating people, then I'm just not going to give this particular talk. And
I think
fair
that
play
was
to
a debate on Islam and atheism, wasn't it? They were going to be debating atheism and Islam, wasn't it? That was what they were.
I forget the exact title. The segregation.
Yeah, that's what the
brought in the last
what it
moment.
Was going. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
The whole point, though, isn't it, Tim and Kel? Very good clip there, because that just sums it up, that we're experiencing these problems right the way across the globe, aren't we? In Canada, in the UK, in the USA, in France, in Sweden, in Norway, all these Muslims are trying it on and pushing. Thank goodness the professor stood his ground and said, no, you know, this is not right. And, of course, the administration wanted him to accommodate this student. Well, if you do that, and that's what that lady was saying, that opens up a whole new ball game, doesn't it? Anybody can say this or that.
The biggest,
and do it under
the
religious
problem.
Perspectives.
The biggest problem that results of that is that there are all too many people who are willing to take it the next step further and bring a lawsuit. And, of course, educational establishments or any establishment that runs on a budget and doesn't have unlimited funds is quite rightly scared of that kind of a prospect. So if a Muslim mentions that he feels discriminated against or oppressed or for any reason, and it doesn't take much, of course, because Muslims have got these paper thin skins where just about anything makes them oppressed or offended, then when they threaten to bring a lawsuit, even if there are grounds for it or not, a lot of organisations will just say to themselves, I can't take the chance, because in this politically correct and multicultural atmosphere that we have, if it's taken to the stage of a civil lawsuit, it's quite possible that the people who determine the outcome of the civil lawsuit are going to be infected with this political correctness and multiculturalism, and if they find against me, I could be put out of business, or my organisation could be put out of business, or my educational establishment could be put out of business, and nobody wants that. So that's
no.
why that's a serious issue, and it's a significant factor in why a lot of people give in to Muslim demands, because Muslims know that there are too many people out there who are willing to give them what they want if they jump up and down and stamp their feet like 2-year-old
right.
children. And we should,
exactly.
yeah, we should be standing up to them and saying, we are not going to give in to your tantrums. You have to start behaving yourselves in the way that ordinary civilized people behave themselves, and we will not put up with it in our societies. And if we can get that message through to the people who are currently making the decisions that are facilitating these Muslim temper tantrums and the ability, the inclination to act like 2-year-old children, then it would be much better if we just eliminated that from our public spaces altogether.
Well, what can I say about that? I agree with that, Tim, and that is the problem we've got, that we haven't got. Some of them start to say things that I think this is wrong, but you don't have them fulfil what most of us think is wrong, and just stand up and say, no, you're not going to have that. You're going to have your tantrums. Well, we're not going to accommodate you, you know, and if you want to go doing all that, then, you know, there are laws that stops you from, doing that sort of thing. If you want to cause trouble and, you know, you want to go around burning cars, well, we've got laws that will put you in prison for it. But, you know, all the time we pander to them, all the time.
Yeah.
They take an inch, then they take another inch, and before you know it, they're taking yards, and they're just taking a piss in the end. Excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen.
It is all about holding them to the same standards, holding them accountable to the same standards that we ourselves, as civilized people, are held to. And if everybody was held to the same standard and no accommodation was given to them or no preference because of their culture or their so-called religion, and they understood that was going to be the case come hell or high water, we would all be a lot better off. But they have a card at the moment that they think they can play that gives them an advantage, and we're letting them play that card. We just have to stop them.
Yes.
We have to say to them, if you play that card, we are just not going to take any notice of you. You will be treated with the contempt and derision that you deserve. Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. We need to start treating these people with contempt and showing them that they will get absolutely no respect if they behave in that childish and immature manner, because that's what they do. It is childish and immature. They get away with it because we allow them to get away with it, and we have to stop allowing them to get away with it.
I think we're all in agreement there, myself, you, Tim, and Kel, and of course a lot of our good people who's in the chat room this evening probably agree, and all of our listeners probably agree with that statement there. I've just got to have a little mention to my dear old mate Army, British News. He's not feeling too well, and he's gone to have a lay down, and he said to tell everybody regards to the room,
take care, guys, and he'll see us all later. So, to me, old mate, Army, you take it easy, brother, you know?
Yep, take it easy.
He wasn't feeling too well. Yeah, that's it. And I'm sure we'll see him again this Thursday. But, actually, Kel, I've got to thank you for bringing that topic up for this evening. It's been a great talking point. And, it's something that we...
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was my pleasure,
we
Jeff.
We'll cover
no
this.
Problem.
We'll probably hear more of this sort of story. Because there's
will.
A lot more to come from this story, isn't there? We do know that. And I'm sure if you have any follow-ups, Kel, that we can talk about it on other shows of what outcome at the end of it was. Because it's still ongoing, isn't it? As far as I can see, it's still ongoing. So it hasn't been resolved.
Yeah, it is. And I had a few more salient points that I was going to bring up, but my mic got a little dusty. But I can probably do that for next Thursday, Jeff.
That's great, Kel. As I say, these are so important. These are, what we've been finding, as I said about that, the professor who was over in this country, was doing a debate in the university, and he walked out because of segregation. And after all that, there was a big hoo-ha over it. Do you remember, Tim? There was a big hoo-ha over it. And he decided that they was going to ban them from having these sort of meetings again because of the...
I remember that, and there was actually, some of our listeners might know this, but there was a section about it on the BBC programme this morning, the Big Question, and it was to do with whether human rights should take precedence over religious rights, and one of the things that was discussed was, in fact, segregation in public spaces like meetings and so on. And there were a couple of Muslim women in the audience who said that they actually preferred to have a space on their own where they could sit aside and not have to sit next to men. And one of the options that was offered in such instances was that if room permitted, well, okay, you could, in theory, I suppose, have a little space set aside for people who want to sit on their own, whether it's women on their own or men on their own, and another section for people who don't really mind because they're normal human beings. They'll sit next to whoever happens to be there. But the Muslim women were getting very, very defensive on this show. I expect one or two of the listeners who are listening in tonight may well have seen this. And one Muslim woman actually said to the presenter, "You're making me feel oppressed, telling me that I've got to sit next to a man. I feel oppressed." And she was, it was so funny. I burst out laughing when I heard her say that. Quite a funny program. If you want to see it, folks, all you would need to do is go to BBC One on Catch Up, the Catch Up service on BBC One, and go to The Big Question from today. It was running at about, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning today. Quite funny to actually watch these
Tim, I must catch up with that a little bit later on after the show.
Anyway, I realise you're getting close to you're running down to the last few minutes of the show, so I won't go on about
that. Tim, I was feeling rather oppressed. So
all right, so I'll turn the microphone back to you and Kel and let you wind it all up.
No, thank you. Thank you, Tim. And it did make me laugh about that one. Said she's feeling oppressed. Yeah, guys, check it out. It's because I know it's probably make you chuckle. But once again, my goodness me, it's like the time does go. You see, I'm sorry that we lost our Tommy this evening. I do know he was having a few, I think his connection problems or something or other he's having. But I'm sure, hopefully, we'll have him back this Thursday and... whatever technical problems he had will be resolved, and we can have. Because I know Kel wanted to play a tune for Tommy this evening. Maybe you can still play that, Kel, if you wanted to. We got a little bit of time, but I'd like to thank everybody, yourself, Tim, Kel.
I'll save it for Thursday when Tommy comes back, because I don't like to play Tommy's songs when he's not here.
Okay, Carl, she's so nice, isn't she? Yes, Carl. Yeah. But also I've got to thank Sue from Sue the Sweetie, Sue from New Mexico, all the great works that she does being here this evening. And as I say, Carl, have we got time for a quick rundown of some of our guests in the chat room this evening? I know we haven't got too much time.
Very, very
nice
quickly
say.
Because you've got
thank
7 minutes. And okay, well, there is Jeff and there is Tim. Tommy was here, and I am the tech producer and supposedly one of the panelists. We have Agador, Bigfoot, COG, FDG, Fendalis, and we have numerous guests here. We have Luchadora. Paul Alexander, Richard Millington, Vorpalbite, and Will Scott, and we have Sue from New Mexico listening on the line, and we also have another guest who was listening a little earlier, and we want to thank you all very much for being here. Please ensure that you come back here to the East Anglian EDR Radio Show this Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. On behalf of Jeff, Tim, and Tommy, and myself, we appreciate your going out of your way to visit us. There you go, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Kel. Yeah, as I say, for everybody and all the listeners out there, so we'll be back again this Thursday. I mean, we like to expand on things like we have done tonight, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight, producing the show with Kel and Tim, and for the little time we had Tommy on the show tonight. But of course, as I say, we'll be back again this Thursday, and you know, there's plenty of things that we'll be discussing this upcoming Thursday. We've got future dates we're looking forward to, demonstrations and that, and this Thursday will be, I've got them all written down, and I'll be speaking about them coming this Thursday. So once again, thank you for joining us and being here this evening. And to everybody in the chat room, God bless you all. To my old mate Army, who's got to lay down. Thanks so much, guys, once again. And anyway, what I'm going to do now is come back into the studio and just trying to find out the exit tune for this evening. It's okay, well, I can't find it. Where have I put it now? So what? I've got it. It's right there in front of me. But, Kel, Tim, thank you so much for being here. Maybe your thoughts for the end of the night, Tim and Kel. Maybe just final thoughts for the evening.
Yeah, over to you, Kel.
It was a good show. Thanks, Jeff and Tim.
Yeah, it was an excellent show. We didn't necessarily get to discuss all the things that we planned right at the start. For some reason, that does seem to get away from us from time to time. But it was still an excellent show with a lot of good points being made. So I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And Kel has put a link into the chat room. Don't forget to tune into Blog Talk Radio, Red Fox Blogger, Blog Talk Radio. I'll get this out any time now. Just put my teeth back in. Red Fox Blogger, Blog Talk Radio, with Kel and myself at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. That's 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, where we'll be discussing about what to do with refugees. Is it best to allow them to come over to live in the West, or would we be better off, or would they be better off, remaining in their own cultures while we send them humanitarian aid? So that proves that looks like it's going to be an interesting topic, which is going to be generating a lot of comments tomorrow. So please tune in. That's 3 p.m. EST, 8 p.m. GMT. And any last words?
I'd like to say, please tune into the show tomorrow. Kel's the Red Fox Blogger Show. As I say, you want to call in, please do, because there's some issues there that you can really get your teeth stuck into. I know, if all goes well, I will be listening. I might even call in tomorrow myself, so because it's a very interesting discussion that they're going to have tomorrow. It's yourself. And I've got this lovely lady saying, you have 90 seconds. So for myself, Tim, Kel, Tommy, for everybody who participates in the East Anglian ZDL radio show, we're signing off for the night. We'll be back again this Thursday. So with that, good night. God bless. Take care. Stay safe. And don't forget, for myself and the panel, no surrender, no surrender ever, guys. And with that,
going underground.
Good night, Phil. Good night, Tim.
Good night, Jeff. Good night,
Bill. Good night, Jeff. Good night, Tim.
Good night,
everybody. Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody. People might say that I should strive for more. But I'm so happy, I can see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your five brigades. And I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, and of mine. The public gets what the public wants, but I want nothing. I have the dust, I'm going underground. What is the prospect for you? That's the path going underground. What is the point of signal? It's the point of shout for tomorrow. People might get some pleasure as they hate me. I've been enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader, don't place your trust. And their lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up.
And once again, we are into archives.
Oh,
my goodness me. The show went, so, I've got to admit, Tim and Kel, the show just went so quick tonight. And that's the first, I looked at the clock a couple of times and I thought, my goodness me. Because, you know, it's like you get on a bit of a roll, you get on talking about some of the important issues, and the time, as you know, Tim, it just slips away so quick. That 2 hours just, well, it just goes just like that, doesn't it? It's just amazing, really. You probably noticed that yourself.
It did seem to go quick, and I'm trying to pin down where we slipped off our main topic, and we got to we brought in a couple of extra topics on the side, and I think it was round about the time we were discussing the definitions of what Muslims mean when they're talking about characteristics of Islam, and I think I may have got a little bit carried away with that. It slipped off the main topic a bit. So
it's just general. You know, you're having a conversation about something, and sometimes you do. It does. But then again, it was still interesting. But even though it just slivers away slightly to the right of what we're talking about, it's still
very important issues that we was discussing. I would say everything we discussed tonight was very important and very much a talking topic at a point as well. You know, that's what I say. You know, people, you know, if they inclined and they want to call in, I mean, some of the issues we've been discussing tonight, it's quite obvious that if people want to call in, there were some great points that they could bring up. That's why I like to expand a little bit so as to, you know, sort of whet people's appetite. I think, oh, I'm going to call in. It's that I want to discuss about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Jeff. There were a lot of people in the chat room tonight, and I was surprised we didn't have more people with their hand raised wanting to put their two penneth in.
Yeah.
That's because normally you do get one or two people who add their little bit to the conversation, you know, and it makes it a bit more lively. So nobody raising their hand tonight.
I think sometimes, Tim, you know, you've got to think of it as being someone who listens to the radio show. Maybe some people, they just, you know, they like what they're listening to and they'd rather listen than maybe engage with us on some of the issues. I mean, you know, if Frank would have been here, he would have probably, or if he could have raised his hand and he would have joined in with the conversation and other people could. But sometimes people just enjoy what we're talking about, and maybe they, you know, in the end, it's up to them if they want to call in or not, you know. So, you know, sometimes you find, and all of a sudden you'll notice that the switchboard goes crazy. One night it goes crazy. You've seen that time. And it just happens like that. But maybe I should have pushed it a little bit more, you know, please call in, you know, the lines are open. But I didn't tonight because I was... we was engaged in certain conversations that took me mind off it, and as we both know, multitasking is not a great forte, Tim.
it certainly isn't mine. I was quite embarrassed last week. I won't go into the details, but one of the things I should have done at the end of the Audrey Russo show on Thursday was I should have had rehearsed in my head all the credits that I should have given to the various people who I have the good fortune to work with in the counter jihad blog talk radio sphere, and I made a total pig's ear of it, and I was embarrassed.
Basically,
about it.
I think you covered, you know, most people. you covered, you know, Liberty GB. You covered Curl. You covered ourselves on the East Angles. And I know there's lots of other people that you'd like to mention, but as you say, when the time's ticking away a little bit, you get as many people in as you can, and most people would know that you know you're thinking about them, but maybe you didn't mention so and so and so and so, but that just happens. But I think it's important you did what you did, Tim.
Well,
and you put some great links in, and
you've
done a great job.
It wasn't the end of the world, but I was embarrassed about it. But the important thing is that next time that opportunity or that particular situation comes up, hopefully I'll learn from it. It's I remember when I first started coming on Blog Talk Radio, the very first thing I thought is, oh, this radio show presenting lark looks really easy. How hard can it be? And what I've learned over the period of about 6 months that I've been involved is, in fact, it's a lot harder than it looks. And there's all sorts of things that you have to remember all the time, whether you're just on the show on your own or whether you're with a co-host. And the give and take in the conversation to make sure that it ends up being an informative and entertaining program. And then, of course, when you've got people that call in, or you've got maybe two or three panelists, all that has to be moderated so carefully. I mean, obviously, we had a discussion the other weekend about that, but it's a lot harder than it looks. And really, you know, I have to sort of give credit where it's due, really, because there was a time when I thought, oh, this is got to be really easy to do, but it isn't easy at all. And any of our listeners out there who are thinking of starting up their own radio show, I don't say this to put them off. because you may well, if you do start up your own radio show, you may well have some very interesting things to say that a lot of people ought to be listening to. But the actual process of presenting the show and making sure that it flows smoothly, it is not as easy as it looks. So I'm just
no, but it's all about trial and error. And Tim, even you know down the lines a bit, we're still going to make mistakes. We're still we're only human, and doing live shows, things go wrong. And I think most of our listeners take that on board that sometimes, things happen and it's out of your control, your screen freezes on you, things like that. But you just roll with it and just try to keep it moving along. You know, you've always said it's great to have a co-host or panelist that Jeff's having a problem. You know, we'll keep it rolling. You know, and vice versa. You know, this is just the way that been working all together, and it doesn't lose none. I don't think it loses anything because most of our listeners keep coming back anyway. So that even though sometimes we might make a few mistakes or maybe, like you said yourself, Tim, you felt a bit embarrassed because there were small people you wanted to mention but didn't have the time. But these things, it's all about a learning curve. Kel will tell you, Kel, isn't it? It's a learning curve, and we still make mistakes. It doesn't matter how far along we go, how many years that we do, Blog Talk Radio, we're going to find things that all of a sudden it's going to be a little obstacle in our way. But we just move with it, Tim. You know, just roll with it, brother.
Oh yeah, I mean it isn't all bad news. I mean, one of the things that happened at the weekend, I'd switched the. It was 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, and I just got up and I was just having my cornflakes, and I opened up the TV. I opened up the computer, and I was just looking to see what had come in the way of emails and so on. And up comes this little box in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, and it's Kel, and she says, "Any chance of you calling into my show?" And I was thinking, "Hang on, it's 9 o'clock in the morning here. That means it's 4 o'clock in the morning in Canada. What is Kel doing with a show at 4 o'clock in the morning?" And I thought, well, okay, she asked me to call in, so I'll call in. And it transpired that she'd had a little problem with a technical problem, and she was having to re-record her show. And so she asked me if I would join in. I said, yeah, it'd be my pleasure and my honour. And so we put together the show that Kel had to re-record in order to replace the one she'd had a problem with. And it actually worked out. Well, I think it worked out pretty well. Obviously, you'd have to ask Kel and see if she feels the same way. But I thought it worked out really well. But I mean, that's the sort.
Yeah, it worked out perfect. It worked out really good, Tim. And I appreciate your doing that for me at the last moment.
Because I wasn't sure if you were still with us in the archive, Kel, which is why I was speaking as if you weren't there. So sorry about that. I didn't realise you were still listening in. But, I mean, it was important thing. The point I was going to mention was we are all part of the same big family, and I know from time to time that there's the occasional mistake, and we all make them. And I did feel bad about last Thursday because I was under rehearsed, and I realised afterwards I should have taken a lot more care over something that was important as a debut show on Audrey Russo. I should have taken more care over it. So I felt bad about it afterwards. And
opinion, though, Tim, listening to the show and listening to yourself and listening to Audrey, she probably enjoyed you being a guest, and you could see the way that she warmed you so much, and a bit of a laugh and a joke. It's quite obvious it was a very good show. I don't think you've got anything to worry about maybe being under rehearsed, because I didn't have that. I didn't look at it that way at all. I don't know what Kel thought, but I thought that was a great, great show. I thoroughly enjoyed it, Tim, and what you had to say in that. It was great. It was great to listen to. So you might think, because I've said before, we're our worst critics, and we think, oh, if only I'd done this, But you know what? When you listen back and you think, oh my goodness me, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And that's the way that I found myself, you know, over time. You're probably coming over a lot better than what you think you are. And, oh dear, I missed that. I shouldn't have mentioned it. But it's just what we that happens now and again, Tim. But so I'm sure, as I say, that I know it's playing in your mind a little bit, but I'm sure when you get another bite of that same cherry, I'm sure you will be spot on.
Well,
you know?
we're going to have an interesting week next week for sure. I think Kel may have already told you a little bit about it. Is that right, Kel?
Yes.
I just told people to tune into the Radio Jihad Network tomorrow night for a big announcement on the Vito Esposito show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we're going to tune in tomorrow night, and there'll be something interesting for people to listen to. So we'll no more than that at the moment.
Say no more. Nudge, nudge.
Say
wink,
no.
Wink.
Nuts,
I think I know something, but I won't say nothing. I won't spill the beans. I've just got a feeling that I know, but I'm very secretive. Don't call me secret squirrel for nothing, you know.
They don't call you secret squirrel for nothing. That's very true. Secret squirrel.
Oh, no, no, you're going to come out with squirrel jokes now, Tim, you and Kel and Tommy.
No, as if.
Jeff, we know where Jeff hides his nuts. Yeah, I've heard them all.
Yeah. No, as if.
No, as if. No, that's a Muslim name. That is as if.
As if, yeah, that's right. That's what do you call an honest Iranian lawyer? As if. I remember Maz Gibrani telling that joke, and I thought it was highly
very good. Anyway, what I'm going to do is, I say, I'm going to drink my cold cup of tea in a second. Well, I've got to thank you to him for contributing so much to the show tonight, and Kel, thank you so much. Kel, your last thought for the evening before I say good night? I was going to say, I'm trying to think of what I should play out for it. You know, I'm going to play the Ideal Radio commercial. I'm going to play that for our exit theme for the night, Tim, I reckon. You know, and
one of Martin Hive's compilations.
Yeah, it's the Ideal, you know, sort of radio commercial. I just think I'll just end the show tonight on just that little. It's only like a minute and 55 or something like that. Okay, your last thoughts for the evening?
Oh, it was a good show. It was interesting. I'm glad that I was able to get my topics in there and generate a very busy conversation in the chat room with my disclosing a few of the topics that I brought from Canada. So I appreciate that.
Brilliant.
Jeff. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that was great. And we've all said, girl, we do like to hear the Canadian prospect, especially when we're talking about, you know, Ariel Sharon previous in the show, God bless him, and the way that Canada's been full of support for Israel, like it also has been staunch ally of Israel's, and that's good. That's good to have, you know, a great international show like ourselves that we speak on this, and you know, the Canadian perspective, the UK perspective, and occasionally when we have Michael Green call in, the American perspective as well. So it's always good to hear differing views of the things, the topics of the time. So once again, good night, Kel. Good night, Tim. And I will catch up with you in the week sometime. And I'm going to be probably in touch with Ivan tomorrow, Tim, and I'll get in touch. We had this conference call probably in the mid-week. I was going to try to do it over the weekend, but I was a little bit tired up. So I'm into that, Tim. No, I'm joking.
I've heard the rumours,
oh,
Jeff.
Dear,
I've heard the rumours.
I'm digging holes for myself, Tim. What am I like?
Oh, what you like.
Whips and chains.
Yeah.
Terrible. What a terrible man. But it's been great. Thank you, Kel. thank you, Tim, and anybody listening in the archives, I hope you've enjoyed this this archive edition. It's been a short, sharp sweep archive edition tonight, but we will be back again this Thursday with more topics to talk about. So good night, guys. See you later. No surrender.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Good night, Kel. Guys. Good night, Jeff.
Good night, Kel.
Good night. Good night, Kel. Good night, Jeff.
If you are sick and tired of listening to the lies you hear from politicians and the mainstream media about Islam, and you want to hear the truth about the crimes that are committed in its name in your country and all around the world, then please tune in to the East Anglian EDL radio show on blogtalkradio.com on Thursdays, Fridays and Sundays at 8:30 GMT and 3:30 EDT. For analysis, updates and news about Islam without any of the lies and political correctness that you hear in the mainstream media, and for updates, news and information about the English Defence League, then come and join us on Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen to all our previous broadcasts at any time by visiting the East Anglian EDL Radio Show archive. The East Anglian EDL Radio Show, the official radio show of the English Defence League.